The Hard Yards on Sports Joe. Brought to you by Innocent Super Smoothies. On the bright side.
To the short side. Oh, it's gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
And Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. We have another great show lined up for you today as Pat McCary has made the trip back from Bilbao to join us. How are you?
Hola.
Oh, jeez, that's good.
Sun-kissed.
Yeah, sun-kissed, Pat.
Like that, yeah.
We're joined by James Downey. Jimmy.
Andy, how are you?
And Owen O'Malley.
How are you?
I am well. Jimmy, you've been playing.
Yeah. I was over in UK last week, playing in Paul Dupuy's testimonial. So I was got to play with some of the old Saints boys. It's good fun, bit of crack. It was quite interesting. We were just talking there. Ben Foden had played 80 minutes on the, well, 70, got sin binned after 2 minutes in his last game, but played 70 minutes for Northampton on the Saturday. Turned up on the Sunday, a little worse for wear, but still put in a good 70 minute performance on the Sunday. Fair play. No, it was great crack though. It was good to get back and get the boots on, but I'm happily retired now.
Happily retired.
I'm done.
Yeah. When was the last time you stepped on the field, Owen?
Oh, it's 6 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And Jack McGrath passed me out chasing for a ball, so I think I knew what I was doing that day. So I tried to get back playing after the injury and played bits of about 4 or 5 games, but couldn't move. Standing a pillar at the side of a ruck for most of the game was as far as I got.
Yeah. What do you do now to keep fit?
It's getting harder. I'm just going to the gym a bit, to be honest. Nothing exciting, so it's definitely getting very hard at the moment. But there's a couple of lads just go in and out with them as much as I can.
Yeah. Talk to our fitness expert beside us here, Jimmy, looking trim. We did have a bit of rugby this weekend. This has been a decent old run for the Hard Yards. Grand Slam.
Yeah.
And now Champions Cup win, Leinster victorious. You made a good point there, Jimmy, before we came in. There was a lot of similarities to the Ireland-France match at the start of the Grand Slam expedition. What did you mean by that?
I think when you look at the way the Irish lads went into that French game and the conditions and how it actually, it's such a leveller, like, you know, you kind of, when you get out in that field and you kind of have those conditions, I think from a perspective of that slippy ball, that's a leveller, like complete leveller, you know, especially, and we were talking about before, me and Pat, all of us were, about how when you have, when Ireland are going in and we're favourites and we want it to rain and now we're not, we just want a dry track and we're pissed off that it's not a dry track. Mm. It's just flipped how much we think about it.
That's an amazing turnaround for those of us who grew up in sort of, you know, 80s and 90s when Ireland were rubbish. And we wanted all the levellers we could get. And now we don't.
Yeah.
Because the odds are in Ireland's favour, in Leinster's favour. And that 10-point game, that was not a 10-point game we saw on Saturday.
No, it was a pretty brutal game, to be honest. You've got to give credit to the French and they're playing the conditions. And they did exactly what the French did in Paris. Slowed down, frustrated Leinster, frustrated Johnny. They weren't getting any change whatsoever. I think, as you said before, Pat, that Teddy Ibrahim said that if they kept going till the next 24 hours, they still wouldn't have scored a try.
Yeah, he was interviewed in this morning's Midi Olympique, and he said if they hadn't been so ill-disciplined at the end, Leinster could have attacked till tomorrow. Mm. They weren't crossing that line. And that second half is what it looked like, Owen. Leinster did not create any chances in that second half. The Racine defence was fantastic.
Yeah, it was. It was really good. I think their line speed was phenomenal. And I'm a little bit surprised they didn't turn them a bit more and put the ball in the corners, but obviously they were trying to get around them, trying to play some rugby. But I thought the difference really was Leinster looked like they just know how to win. And you know, you could say they got a little bit lucky with Lambie, with Carter, things like that, but I still think they're a team that knows how to win, and you can't really buy that in those big days, you know.
Mm. What was the reaction, Pat, in the press box with Carter going out and then Lambie, you know, being knocked out of the game after only, what, just shy of 3 minutes?
Yeah, it felt like everything was going Leinster's way. It almost felt a bit like the
I think was it the second test, the Lions test, where the Lions were getting all the penalties and the injuries, and the I think he had the, was it the yellow card or the sending off in the Lions test, Sonny Bill Williams as well. And it was like everything was going in their favour, but like they still weren't building on it. Like, and it was just like it was getting handed to them on a plate, but yet they hadn't done anything yet. And it was such a slow, like a weird game to watch. Like, I remember there's two moments I looked up at the clock in the stadium, and it was like 32 minutes gone at one stage, another time it was 64. And I was just saying, this game hasn't started yet. Like, it, there was no real moments of kind of fluidity or anything like that. And yeah, just like Racing were just playing such a high line. Like, I just kept thinking Leinster were going to give away an intercept try at any stage, like, and because they're just pressing so high. And then when it came to the rucks, like, there was just lads just always every ruck lying on the wrong side of the ruck, arms up in the air, sorry about that, and they were just getting away with it. And yeah, Racing, they, like, I don't know who had done it with them, but they drilled so hard and they'd done their homework so hard, and they looked out for the likes of, like, Toner's always kind of coming in beyond the ruck and pushing lads out of the way. He was getting wrung by his neck out of the way. Dan Levy, they saw him as a danger man as well, and just if anybody could kind of lay a hit on Levy or kind of do anything extra to him or turn him over, they were patting him on the head, giving him grief as well. But yeah, it was such a strange game to watch. Like, the you kept thinking Leinster were going to kick off at any stage, like, what's the spark, what's it going to be? And it ended up not coming until the last 10 minutes, and Ringrose, I think, provided it. But yeah, a strange final to watch.
Like, that was the first time that Leinster led that whole game, you know, and it's about
90 seconds to go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think Owen makes a good point that they know how to win. They didn't get frustrated. A lot of teams, I think, would have actually collapsed and gone, oh, what are we doing? What are we doing? Like, with this defence, this high line, just kept plugging away. And eventually, as you say, that knowing, being in that ability to actually know how to finish games and know how to win, Leinster certainly have that, don't they? Like, you know, and it's and even when you lose someone like Johnny, who's not kicking well, who's got a groin injury, and then the Seabee can step up, it's
that's possibly an underplayed moment, because that was not a gimme kick, and it wasn't clear to those of us, at least sort of not in the 15 Leinster players in the field, that Sexton wasn't taking that kick. And Nathewa just strides up, strokes it over like it was kicking practice.
Is that the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a tougher one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the one in front of the post, look, any competent kicker at that level is going to get that kick. Yes, the circumstances are tense, but they're getting that kick. The first one was not a gimme. And I thought that was balls now from Nathewa to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, there was another interesting one where Sexton, he had to kick from the halfway line, and it nearly went, it was a daisy cutter, like, it went really wrong. But then he got another one soon after, and he was almost a little bit closer, but Sexton said, I'll take that again. It was almost to prove a point that he could do it. Then he missed another one after that. He had the distance, but it just went right, wide to the right. But then maybe after that, he was just like, I'm not feeling it here, I'm a little bit tight. But it's happened a few times now, hasn't it, in the last few months?
I think it's really interesting that the confidence, people have talked about the confidence in self that Leo Cullen had to be able to bring Stuart Lancaster in. You have the confidence of self that Jonathan Sexton has to know himself and to say, do you know what, it's actually better I don't take this. And that's really impressive.
Yeah, it is. I think when you've kicked a 45-metre drop goal in Paris, it's quite easy because people don't doubt that you're walking away from it, you know, and he's kicked so many match winners in his time. But Nasiwa is unbelievable. Like, he's a guy, he hasn't played a huge amount of rugby this year, certainly in the last couple of months. He's at the end of his career, he's fairly bashed up at this stage, but he has done it so many times for Leinster, just match winning moments, and they're always in the big days. You look to the other Heineken Cups, the games he's played in those matches, it's a try he scored against Leicester in the Aviva, whatever year that was, but he's produced a huge amount for Leinster and possibly the best foreign signing of all time for any Irish club, really.
Mm. Mm, certainly in terms of quality and just sheer number of games, man, he's been value, isn't he?
What he brings outside of the actual pitch as well, you know, he is huge in building that winning mentality and building, you know, Leinster don't go too high or too low from one match to the next, you know, they're always just kind of going about their business, you know, and Leinster or East is a huge amount of what kind of changed that when he came into the place, you know, with Chex and with Joe.
Yeah. So your time when you were playing there, I mean, you retired at 25. So let's say you're about 19, 20 when you made your debut?
It would have been 19, yeah.
Yeah. And so when you're there, what is Issa doing that's outside the lines that is making the impact of Issa Nathewa the impact of Issa Nathewa?
He first of all arrived and played kind of out half for a couple of, for half a season maybe, if you remember, and everyone we kind of didn't really get it with him, you know, thinking this guy isn't at the races and what all the fuss is about. Obviously, then a few years on, he's proved everyone fairly wrong. But I think for as a younger guy coming in, I probably didn't realise what Issa was doing behind the scenes for a couple of years, because he's not a guy who talks too much. You know, he talks and pretty irregularly, but people do listen. But he's a huge influence in the leaders group, things like that, like the little things, like the cultural, the habits, things like that. That's what Issa drives the whole time, you know, and he's kind of driving the humble side of things. He doesn't want, you know, people celebrating tries, people celebrating wins too much. It's kind of, that's the expectation and we're on to the next thing, you know. Mm. So it's just a different mentality to it. And I think what he drives is a consistency rather than just getting up for one big game, two big games. He just wants it every time. And he's just so professional with it.
Yeah, that's going to be important this week. We'll come back to Leinster Munster this week, but that aspect is going to be very important for Leinster this week. Pat, you had an interesting chat after the game with Dunnock O'Ryan. Yeah. We might listen to that now.
Just looking at the arm, is this from the shoulder? You took a knock early in the game?
Yeah, I got a bit of a bang in the first half from my line-out. So, it's all part of it, anyway. It's rugby.
Yeah, and that was the line out, wasn't it? That you came down awkwardly.
Yeah.
But you were never going to go off at that stage, were you?
There's not many times you get to play in a final, so you just suck it up and get on with it, really. So, yeah, that's basically it.
Is there any kind of consolation for yourself to kind of know that you went out and you delivered? You know, like you kind of did your part, and you guys actually did well at nullifying Leinster, but just, you know, like at least you went out to do a lot of the job that you set out to do.
We probably made a lot of mistakes, but their discipline wasn't where it needed to be, I suppose, and especially in the final, where there's a lot of pressure at stake. But it was just disappointing, especially having put a lot of pressure on Leinster as well. Obviously, they're an excellent side, obviously champions now, and in the last 10 minutes, I suppose, when we did have 3-point advantage to give away a few silly penalties that we didn't need to do. Just pretty unfortunate, because I thought our defence was really well. When they made a few line breaks, we scrambled pretty well as well, which was good. It was just needed to take. Just chatting to the touch judges, they're really good actually. Just giving us feedback on the pitch, saying, look, just give that extra meter. And look, it just told in the last 10 minutes. And look, Leinster, as I say, kept before they kept coming, and you know, they obviously are worth their win.
And any kind of complaints with a couple of decisions that went your way? I see when Barnes and the touch judges were going up to get their medals, it was kind of round boos from everywhere. No one was completely happy with them. But anything that you might look back on and kind of go?
Not at all. No, I thought they were great. They were a very good team. The three lads, Tom, JP, and Wayne, they talked to players really, really well, a lot on the pitch, and it's great. And it was a frustrating as a spectacle, I'd say, to watch, you know, because it wasn't many tries. But it's a tough gig being a ref, and they're top class.
And what are you saying to the lads there? Like, you hit the front. Actually, you were in the front for the third minute onwards, but you hit the front again in the, I think, 72nd, 73rd minute.
Yeah.
What are you saying to the boys there? Like, kind of, you know, Leinster are going to come and hit us back again, aren't you?
Well, that was it. We put up a box kick, I suppose, and it was a silly tip tackle by one of the lads. You know, we'd be disappointed to give it away on, I think, Rob Kearney. And after he was doing the box kicks, we just put the pressure back on again. All we had to do was just make the tackles, and then just put the pressure back on Leinster and force them to make a move. Unfortunately, we made the move for them, and that was just disappointing. It's just disappointing to, as I said, discipline to let us down.
And it was always one of these battles that people were setting up before the game. It was you against James Ryan. You know, it's an easy thing to do, but you had a great game, and James had an unbelievable game as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's a great player, yeah. And look, he's playing a fantastic season as well. So, yeah, it's great to see. Great watching him in Ireland as well, yeah.
And the last thing I was going to say to you is, did you get a chance to go into the Leinster dressing room? Even and share a beer with them at the end of the game?
Yeah, I had a beer with the refs, and had a beer with Tyke Furlong and Johnny there afterwards as well, and a good chat there with Leo as well. So it's kind of hard to kind of catch up with everybody, but you try and do your best as well, but I wouldn't want to wreck their woes anyway.
Well, listen, good luck at the rest of the season. Top 14 as well,
man. Cheers.
So Dunnock O'Ryan, head high even in defeat, and setting up future wins by going to have a beer with the refs after the game. Yeah. You were laughing when that happened there.
That's pure Duncan Ryan, that's all that is. But you can sense how frustrated he is as well in the interview with Pat there. Like, you know, it's just some of the French things that they do. It's the small little things. It's those easy penalties that they're giving away, you know, from like a tip-tackle. And then, I don't know if we want to talk about it now, but we've got that Teddy Thomas. What is he doing?
We'll come back to that. Okay. That is circled.
The Teddy Thomas segment later on.
I think there will be, yeah. But we will talk about the officials. So there was a couple of things there. He said that they thought the feedback from the touch judges was really good. Just an extra yard, an extra yard. Now, when you're watching, it looked as if they were offside half the time. But he said, no, we were getting feedback, and the officials are the only ones that count on the day. There's been a lot of talk about Wayne Barnes. Was he good? Was he not good? Did he get things right or wrong? Jimmy first and then Antoine.
I didn't think it was his best game, but for both teams, to be honest.
Okay.
From previous dealings with Wayne Barnes, he does like to be a bit of the centre of attention. He likes to make decisions that can have an influence on the game. I know, like, he sent off Dylan Hartley in that final. In the UK, and look, it's always kind of about him, but I think he was just a bit inconsistent, you know. Like, Leonie Nakarawa is not gone, like, he knew his yellow should have been a straight yellow. Like,
the reaction of Nakarawa himself said, "I'm walking."
Completely. Yeah. I just thought he was very, some of the things was inconsistent, but look, for both teams, you know, I think there was no handout for advantage a lot of the time. Like, suddenly it was a penalty and there was no advantage at all. Well, I think a different ref might have let it play a little bit more. The touch judges were certainly influential, because play was going on and all of a sudden he gets something in the ear and he was going back to bring it back for a penalty. So
there was a lot in the ear, Owen. You could hear it coming through JB Doyle, and I forget the second touch judge, it escapes me. And a lot of them just talking. That's a good thing. We want to hear the officials communicate. But what was your perception of the performance?
I didn't really think it was great. I think I kind of got a bit confused by it at times. I thought I don't know which side he favoured, really, to be honest with you. I just thought, as a game, he just slowed it up, and I think the conditions, the physicality of it all, was going to go that way anyway. But it's just the amount of times he blowed his whistle. Like, I don't know how it compares to another game, but it certainly seemed like a huge amount, and any time didn't get a massive amount of phases in any part of the game, you know. And obviously that's when things start to get a little bit looser and guys get a bit more space, but it seemed like it didn't ever really go there, with, unless it was very tight around the ruck.
Yeah, it's something that Mike Prendergast had talked about last week, where he said that that Racing were very, very good at creating line speed, and this was disrupting French teams, but he thought that Leinster might bring something different in just that huge, huge multi-phase attack, as in sort of into the 20s.
Yeah.
And you're right, we never really got there.
What I was saying, even about that, Barnes was just that he'd kind of set a precedent for himself. So, like, I think early in the game, Leinster had a soft penalty where Kearney went low, and there was a kind of an arm around him like that, but Kearney ducked into the tackle and he gave the penalty to Leinster. But then he kept giving penalties if guys were ducking into tackles, and you talked about Mark Andrew as well, being only 5'7", 5'8", and he's ducking as well, and, like, Levy's reaching over. What's Levy going to do here? Like, he's... So, like, Barnes had kind of done that thing where he's such a stickler for the rules then that he stuck to it for the rest of the game. And as I said, yeah, you just saw the Racing boys always on the wrong side of the ruck as well. But then they know Barnes, they played him very well, like, you know, and it was up to Leinster then to kind of, you know, work to that as well. But it was interesting to see that, you know, the both sets of guys booing him. And I actually saw there was an exchange between Raj and Matt Williams on Twitter yesterday about the game as well, where Williams was talking about them slowing the game up and Raj was telling them to watch the game back and stuff, and maybe just defending his Racing boys.
Yeah, a little bit maybe, yeah. the Teddy Thomas segment, we start into that now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What a brain fart.
Yeah. So if there's anyone out there who perhaps watched the game and then went and had a couple afterwards to discuss the game, and maybe had a couple on Sunday as well, you might have forgotten about this, but maybe you didn't. So it's coming up to, it's Leinster have an attack. They've got a line out. Leonie Nakarawa robs the line out at the front. Beautiful steal. Taps it down, gets given to Teddy Thomas, who's about, I'm going to say, 18 yards in from touch, inside his 22. Jimmy, what happens next?
I don't know, something goes on in his brain. He obviously sees something that no one else sees. I think he was looking to run it initially, and then he just steps back in towards the pack and towards touch and closer to touch, and I was like, oh my god. I'm like, and you can see the faces on the Racing players from the line eight, having done such good work to be in such a poor position, from the knock on effect to Nakarewa's penalty to being inside their own 22, like championship minutes, you know, last couple of minutes, and then into touch, turnover again, and you're like, oh, like you can just see the shock, like arms go up in the air, and ultimately leads to the penalty that Leinster win the game from. Like it's mind boggling what he's thinking there. I don't know what he's thinking. Does he know what he's thinking? I don't know.
Yeah,
it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking.
That was what I was saying. There was an ocean of space on the left as well. All they had to do was, they could have even got a try. Like Leinster were that committed. All they had to do was go left, and for some reason he just goes right. Like, and
yeah. Oh, and he really had to try to get bundled out into touch from there.
I think that's it's such a French thing, isn't it? Like the penalties that they gave away, yeah. Mistakes like that. Like I thought they did control that game for a lot of it, but then there's the sloppy mad things, and they are brain farts, whatever you want to call them. They're inexplicable, you know, and it is just every time those French teams just can't seem to do it for what was a pretty structured performance from Racing for most of it, with just a few blips in it that were, you can hear Donegal Ryan kind of being pretty, he's very frustrated, you know, but he's being pretty polite about it, as well as being pretty polite about the ref. But obviously he's trying to be graceful in defeat with it, but I'd say he must be furious.
Yeah, after the, so again, Midi Olympique had just a headline, "But Why Teddy?" in a whole article on just this. Said Thomas and Talas missed the drop goal at the end to hopefully bring into extra time if you're Racing. They both stayed inside the dressing room for an hour and just then left. And of course, they didn't realise that the reporters would still be there waiting dutifully.
I pulled the chair up at one stage, I was waiting for that long. But yeah, Teddy, Ira Byrne, he was
fantastic.
He
had a great game, and he dominated the mix zone then. He was there in his slip on shoes and his bag over shoulder, chatting for an hour, like, and some of the other boys kind of sneaking past in the background. And you could see, like, you know, like the French guys are always good for access. They'll always, like, you know, they'll have 10 or 12 guys coming out, but you could probably forgive the guys for just kind of maybe taking the back door out onto the team bus.
I think you could. It's, you know, these are big moments, and they're people, you know, and it's going to hit people in different ways, and some people can deal with these things in different ways. But listen, he's a fantastic player.
Yeah.
He'll have other days. One little nice moment at the very end was when Leinster lifted the trophy. Jordy Murphy appeared at the front. That was unexpected, Pat.
Yeah, and they had to, he didn't want to do it as well, and they all kind of pushed him to the front, and yeah, and for a while it almost looked like they wanted him to lift it on his own, but then he kind of gave Issa a nudge, and Issa kind of helped him out, and the two of them lifted it together. But a really nice moment, and they often kind of do that with departing players, but yeah, it was a nice touch.
Yeah, Issa talked about that after the game.
And Jordy's been phenomenal. He's such a dedicated player. He's, you know, plays with his heart on his sleeve and will just give it his all. So, you know, pretty fitting for him to have an outstanding campaign. And you know, we don't. It's just good that he lifts the trophy. You know, he's in the centre of it all. He's in the mix of things throughout the whole campaign, and a good way for him to sign off his European honours with Leinster. You know, maybe we'll see him back one day.
It's a tough way to leave for him.
Oh yeah.
But I think if you look through the squad, there's so many stories behind each player there. Like if you look at, you know, people just assume. Obviously, you say, take Devin Toner. That's his fourth Heineken Cup medal.
Yeah.
But that's probably the first one he's really started, you know, where played 80 minutes in, I don't know how many he is, but the large majority of them. Then you look at a guy like Jordan Larmour, who said at the start of the year he wanted to play Leinster A. He's got a Grand Slam and Heineken Cup. You know, it's bananas. Or then you've got to feel sorry for guys like Dave Kearney, who's not getting a mention. He's a phenomenal rugby player, just had rotten luck. You know, Jamie retiring the year he did. Sean O'Brien. Like, there's so many different layers behind it for different people. And Robbie Henshaw, I thought his season was finished, comes back. A guy like Ross Byrne plays against Exeter, comes on after 5 minutes. Leinster losing, was it 17-3 with 14 men at one stage? And he turns around, you know. I think that's why the Heineken Cup is so special, or the European Cup. so much happens over that, and I think it's easy to get swept up in what happens in the final, but if you start digging through those matches pretty quickly, you remember some mad things that go on during it, you know, and players who never thought they'd get a chance playing yeah. massive games.
But that's where the strength of Irish squads come into it, like yeah. you know, and that Leinster squad of, if you do miss a player, one can step up. Like yeah. you look at, like, we've spoken loads here about Dan Levy, like, Dan was nowhere near it, like, and you've Van der Flyer and you've yeah. Sean ahead, and like, even Jamie's there,
and
Ruddock, you know,
Ruddock, yeah.
and yet he's there, you yeah. know, and he's stepping up, and look, it's phenomenal what they have. But even the teams they beat, like, it's yeah. not like we were talking before, and you're talking, like, they've beaten Glasgow, Montpellier, Scarlets,
yeah. Exeter. Yeah, next season. The odds for next season's Champions Cup are already out. So it's 17-10 Leinster, 5-1 Saracens and Montpellier, 6-1 Exeter, 15-2 Racing. What have all those got in common?
Leinster beat them.
Leinster beat them this year, home and away.
But like, every time they played them, or whoever they played, they were yeah. like top of the Premiership, top 14.
Glasgow as well. That's yeah. exactly. Glasgow, Scarlets, last season's champions. Like, Leinster knocked them all over this year. It's a phenomenal run. I mean, the second team after Saracens to win a 9-from-9 to season. It's extraordinary. And we haven't talked about a lot James Ryan apart from Pat, when you asked Dunica, like, is James better than you, basically?
Yeah. But Dunica Ryan, like, as I said to him, he should be proud of himself. He went out and performed in a final, but James Ryan was absolutely class. Like, even in that first half where Leinster were struggling to get going, he was the one guy who was getting them over the gain line again, making big tackles, making big plays, and just from start to finish. And this guy, like, you know, like, having seen him, like, even from St. Michael's under 20s, you always kind of knew he was going to be good. He was going to make a breakthrough for Leinster before he badly tore his hamstring last season, was out for a good few months, but it was just a matter of time for this guy. And he came in and he was absolutely brilliant. And the whole game, like, you know, he was the talisman. He's 21, like, and he's
21.
Yeah,
playing lock, like, lock 21 is like the equivalent of wing 12. You know what I mean? It's just extraordinary. And this is something else we were talking about. The quality of games in this run that he's on of not being beaten, and yes, that's not really that important. It's just, it's a nice thing to throw in. But he starts off with the USA and Japan. Then he's got Dragons and Southern Kings. Okay, that's your first four games as a professional player. Then Montpellier, Glasgow, Ulster, South Africa, Argentina, Exeter twice, Munster, Glasgow, Montpellier, France, Wales, Scotland, England, Saracens, Scarlets, Racing. It is top quality run. Like, it's extraordinary that he's unbeaten.
Yeah, you run out of superlatives for him, don't you? Like, 'cause every time he just keeps raising the bar, and you're just waiting for him to have a quiet game, and he doesn't. He just keeps producing. And look, like, you got to give some credit as well, to, I think, to Dev in there as well, and like, he's learning from him there too. And but everything he does, like, I don't know, man, I just keep talking so much about him. He's superb, like, you know, he's like MOM there at the weekend, and everything he does, his go forward, he's a breakdown, like, and he doesn't look as big, you know, shoulder wise or anything like that, but he's something else. He can carry ball too.
There's lads who had a 10-year international career wouldn't have achieved what he's achieved in 1 year, you know. It's unbelievable. But the other thing, and I don't know the circumstance around it, but you look at a guy like Joey Carberry, Ross Byrne, and all the chat going to Ulster and whatever, but like, these guys, just to bring it back again, I don't know the exact statistic on how many guys Leinster used during that Ireland Cup, but if you start losing one or two, you know, suddenly this doesn't happen. And these, Johnny goes off against Exeter excuse me, and the backup just isn't there, you know. I think it's a huge thing. I know these guys aren't playing on the absolute biggest days all the time, but it's huge for Leinster and for Leo and Lancaster to bring these guys through to that level and then possibly get plucked, you know. It's a pretty tricky one for the club.
Well, I think we'll leave that there, and we might talk about that squad depth and what Leo does for next week after the break.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember Raj Kev in the Killiney? He used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like, every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
And we're back. So first part of the show was all looking back. This part is looking forward. So Leinster have to pick themselves up or keep themselves on an even keel, however you want to look at it, because they've got a big game against Munster at the RDS this weekend. We were just talking there. None of us can remember the exact time that Leinster played Munster at the RDS zone. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I don't know the reason why, because obviously the Viva has a good record for us, but it's a huge game. And the lads didn't seem too beaten up. I'm sure they were, but I'd say they have a couple of big nights behind them now. You know, it's the problem. And when we won it in 2012, we had a couple of big nights. You know, when it was trying to piece ourselves back together for that match. I think we ran out of steam. Was down in Thomond against Munster as well in a Rabo semi-final, or the Guinness as it was then. But a very difficult thing to do. There's a couple of guys who've already won a couple of Heineken Cups, obviously, at this stage. So hopefully the special kind of side of winning a double can maybe calm them down and get them to deliver for another two big weeks. Yeah. But it's a huge ask.
This might be easier psychologically if it was the other way around. If the Pro 14 had been won and you're looking forward to the Champions Cup, if you know what I mean. Not to denigrate the Pro 14, but mm-hmm. there is going to be an element of that.
Yeah, to be honest, it's hard to know. Like, they're just finals of final, you know. It's a huge effort. But there is definitely that extra bit with the Heineken Cup. There's no question, but there's I don't know, did he make a few changes and put a few fresh bodies in and see how that goes? But again, if you're looking at it from a selfish point of view, as one of the guys playing, it's only two games left for Leinster. Potentially you don't want to miss them either, you know. But if you've had a big final and a big 48 hours afterwards, it might be a bit tricky. But
yeah, the man management part of this, to be able to look players in the eye and know, are you actually ready to go here, is going to be big this week.
Yeah, and nobody's going to say they're not, you know, because everybody wants to play Munster in the RDS for a semi-final. It doesn't get any bigger, and you've played the whole season to get to this point, and everyone wants to be part of it, you know. So it's some huge calls, but I think
would you make changes? Would you bring in, you know, let's say McGrath for a Healy, the places where you usually see the alternating players, like slide in Ruddock into the back row, that kind of thing? Would you make those changes, or would you keep faith with the guys who are on the pitch to start the game in Bilbao, provided they're not injured?
I think you probably maybe make a couple without going nuts, but there's probably a few lads pulled up with a lot of bangs after that game as well, you know. So I suppose you see how that goes. Like, even Gibson Park, he was brilliant against the Scarlets, pretty unlucky obviously then to miss out the way he did. Obviously James Lowe maybe comes back in now. It's really hard to know, but you just don't know how lads pulled up afterwards and how they'll arrive to training today.
Jimmy, if you're a Munster, you don't care what Leinster are doing.
No, not at all. No, they had a weekend off, so they'll be pretty focused. This is obviously their whole season, like, you know. And I think you got to look at, it's going to be an easy week, kind of physically, for the Leinster boys. They're not going to do too much. They'll rest up and try and get all their bangs. They'll be off feet. I'd say they'll just kind of walk through some plays, or there won't be any bag work or any contact or anything like that. Yeah. But Munster will be certainly, like, they've had one eye on this for a couple of weeks now. This has been their focus. Yeah. Leinster, their main focus has been racing, and now they've just got to flip it and change and kind of nearly hope to kind of keep going on the crest of the wave a little bit. I agree with Owen. I think a couple of changes should be made for Leinster, but Munster certainly one eye all over this. Like, this is their final, you know. It's coming up here, trying to turn over Leinster in their backyard, and look, it's going to be a great game, you know. And it's good that they brought in the extra seating in the RDS as well. So it's going to be a good game. I'm looking forward to it now.
So that'll bring it up to close to 20,000, Pat.
Yeah, I think it's an extra 700 seats or something like that are available. So should be a good one. And I think, if talking about Gibson Park, actually was someone who came on and actually did well in the last few stages of the Champions Cup final. And
other than that, no, I agree, he did very well.
I think there was one stage Sexton absolutely ripped them out of it. That was probably the moment. And but it was funny, I was kind of doing ratings and kind of, I think I've just one mistake.
Did you give any 10s this week?
I gave Ryan a 10.
Yeah.
But then I gave Gibson Barker 5 and I got absolutely stripped for
him
it.
A 5?
Yeah, I got stripped for it. Somebody said, who's the work experience guy doing the ratings? Like, so I might have to go back and I could give him a retrospective 6 or 7 here. I might have a look at it.
5? you're harsh.
See, yeah. If you're coming off the bench, that's the starting level. You start at a 5 and then you go from there. Like, but yeah, I think maybe him. And then the other one I would put Lowe in instead of Nisewa on the left wing as well.
Instead of Nisewa.
Yeah, I thought Nisewa had a...
Will Iza allow that?
Yeah, he might not. Because then is Nisewa a guy you'd have on the bench as well?
I'd say the bigger question is, with Sexton's injury, will they need Iza for kicking? That could be the one, because they won't have McFadden.
Yeah.
So we'll see how these decisions go this week. But if you're a Munster, can you learn something from how Racing played that Munster can use to make Leinster very, very uncomfortable this weekend, Jimmy?
Yeah, of course you can. You can look at that, like, that line speed they bring, that defence, that aggression, the breakdown. I think the problem for Munster is going to be if they can keep doing that consistently for 80 minutes. It's extremely hard to do, the temptation is to get involved in those breakdowns, to get involved in those skirmishes. They've really just kind of got to frustrate Leinster as much as they can. And then on the flip side, then they're hoping that they get their opportunities, and it needs to be like the Racing game nearly, just get that, but get points and keep that scoreboard taken over. It's the small things that they need to do. It's cup rugby, it's 80 minutes, and look, we were extremely confident for Leinster before the final at the weekend, and look at it, as I say, it's 80 minutes, and it's who knows, like, I don't know. I just think Leinster are way too strong, unfortunately. Like, I think the squad depth they have, as Owen's mentioned, they've quality players who are ready to step in, while Munster, if they miss one or two, it's kind of, you're looking around going, is he as good as the person he's replacing? I don't know. But look, it's all there for Munster, I think, to have a crack at them, but I just can't see it.
So potentially an even bigger game this weekend is Ulster against Ospreys.
Yeah, you were trying to sell that one to me earlier on, weren't you?
I'm trying to sell this notion because Ulster to not be in the Champions Cup next season has significant knock-on impact in terms of recruitment, all sorts of things. It's a big game for Munster against Leinster, obviously, but I think this Ulster one is a bit of a doozy. Owen, when you look up north, there's a lot of Leinster players, ex-Leinster players there. You know, Geordie's on the way.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, I think they've had a tricky year. There's no question. Obviously, coaches and things off the field, and I think they just don't seem to be where they should be, you know, for whatever reason they just haven't clicked it. I think it is a huge game, and even the knock on effect it has to the Irish squad, you know, you do need people competing and you do need that depth again, and if lads are missing out in that Highland Cup rugby, there's no question it'll have a big
effect, especially coming up in a World Cup year. Yeah. We don't have Stockdale, you know. Okay, Rory Best is Rory Best, but the younger players who need that experience, it's...
Yeah, like going away to, you know, the Dragons away and certain places like that, they're just nowhere near international level, you know, and obviously you've still got playing Leinster, playing Glasgow and teams like that, but the teams and the exposure you get to the pressure of the Highland Cup is just miles apart, really, you know. Mm.
What was it like when you looking back to, I think one thing I always remember is the Claremont game away. Ruiz now retired.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of games, that lad.
Unbelievable.
It was a nice guard of honour actually last weekend.
They were superb. You could, like, the everything they did for him, but he completely deserves it. Like, everything he's brought to the game and to French rugby and to Claremont. Like, what a servant to French rugby, you know. He's in the position he's played as well, like from moving into the wing into 13, and yeah, just his body's taken a hammering, but he's come through.
He'll never have to buy a drink again in his life, that lad, will he?
No pasties. No.
Okay, let's predictions before we move on to Twitter questions. Leinster and Munster, Jimmy?
Close, but I think Leinster are going to scrape it, though. I think it's going to be a good game, though. I think Munster are really going to come out of the blocks and really test to see where Leinster are. See if they still have that hangover, you know, and... Yeah, I just think Leinster are going to scrape it, though.
Owen?
I'm biased, but I definitely think Leinster. I think, you know, if you even try not to be biased on it, I think if you look at it in the reality of it, Leinster are a better team at the moment. You know, they're further along, they've got that winning habit, and they're playing at home. Mm. there should be enough there if they've managed to turn themselves around for it.
Okay, Pat.
Yeah, I'd like to see Munster winning it, just because they've, you know, made such progress. But I can see Leinster winning this by nearly 10 points, 10 points or over. I can see Leinster comfortably winning this game.
Yeah, bookies have it at 8. So I think Jimmy's side of things as well. Yeah, Leinster, but tight.
Yeah.
And if they do that 2 weeks in a row, fair play to them. Mm. But definitely, it wouldn't be surprising to see Munster come up here and you know, make people very, very annoyed.
But it'd be the perfect, like, it's spoiling the party, isn't it? Like, yeah. That's like the pre-match chat writes itself. It's like, they've won it, we can go up, ruin the whole party. Like, what a downer it'd be. Like, I've seen it in England before where teams have gone out and won Europe and then they've lost a semi. Mm-hmm. And it's from that high to that low, like, you know, it's just like, what do you celebrate the end of the year? Like, what do you, like, it's a tough one. So
Ulster Ospreys.
Where is it on?
Kingspan.
Ulster.
But not confident. Not confident.
Ulster. But this, look, like, you mentioned recruitment there. Like Dan McFarlane's coming in, good coach, but he's not coming in until January. Like, yeah. Unless
the IRFU managed to say, listen, here's a load of money.
But it's all that bollocks again. Like, exactly. It's like, why can't they do something correct, you know? Like, yeah. Here's a coach, have him in for next year. It's going to be another year now of, even if Ulster do get through, they still have all this off-field stuff going on. Like, they still have, their coach isn't in place for pre-season, he's not implementing his strategy, his game plan. It's going to be, oh, wait till Christmas. Like it's not good enough, you know.
Don't get a chance to do anything, you know. Comes in at Christmas, he's not having an effect for another 2 or 3 months, you know. It's impossible.
Yeah, and players, and who's gonna sign? Oh, we have a coach, but he's not gonna be here till.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, it's a hard sell. Like I know, like, Fez is always going on about it as well, and he's kind of softened a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but it's still not right. And I think
Fez is going through his stages of grief. He's now gone from anger into just quiet resignation.
I think, again, you look at them, there is a huge amount of talent up there and they just can't click it. But I think they need somebody to come in and change the culture and change the mindset of it, you know. Obviously David Humphreys had a big impact when he was there, but probably in a different way. He seemed to be more of a kind of a nearly a military type regime when he was there, you know. And that can only last so long before people go, you know.
So this weekend, do you reckon that they'll come out of it with a win?
I do think so, yeah. I think they're very tough to beat up there. Okay. They are good up there, yeah.
Pat?
Yeah, I can see Ulster winning this. They're kind of in good form, and yeah, I can see them. And Ospreys, I know they've improved. They got the big lads back playing for them, but they're just a rabble, so I can see Ulster winning.
Potentially a big game for a couple of guys finishing as well, isn't it?
Mm, Reece Webb's off, yeah.
But
yeah,
on the Ulster side, I mean.
Bigger, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, a couple of serious stalwarts there with big, big careers up there, you know. So yeah, hopefully they get a good send off.
Okay, so I'm gonna spoil the party. I think Ospreys are gonna make everyone cry. I think they've got a lot of talent, more than their league position has showed this year. So I think they're gonna win by about 3.
Nice,
there you go. Done. Right, sorry. Twitter questions. Okay, thanks very much for sending these in, as always. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @THYRugby and use the hashtag #AskTHY if you want to get in a question for next week's show. First one, from Talking Leinster. Who replaces Eason Atewa as club captain? It's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know.
The candidates.
Yeah, well, certainly Johnny's up there, obviously. Yeah. I think people would argue there's too much on his shoulders, a kicker out half and all the rest, but I don't think he cares. He loves it. And he wants to be that guy, you know. And if he's not going to be the captain, he's certainly going to be making decisions anyway. So he's probably my pick. Now, you've obviously got the other issue that he's not going to be there, you know, for the full season. He's going to be out a lot of the time.
That was the big advantage in having Atewa as club captain, because he was there for all those dirty trips away when, you know, there weren't the same number of eyeballs, but keeping those standards up, that consistency.
Yeah, and it does make a huge difference, like when you've got guys getting their first caps on a wet, windy day in the middle of November when no one's really watching the Rabo League, everyone's watching the Autumn Internationals, you know. To have a guy like Issa there, it is huge. But Where else? Who? There's probably some other guys.
I think it might be Reece Ruddock.
Yeah.
And then you could actually see Sexton stepping up for the big game. Like, he's done it so far in Europe as well. So
I'd like to think Reece will get back into the international setup as well, is the problem, though. And I agree with you. Like, Reece as a person is a phenomenal leader, and he's the kind of guy you want as a captain. But again, you hopefully have the problem from Reece's point of view that he's playing for Ireland.
Is Fardy then the other one then? Yeah.
But Leinster have always kind of, if you look at the way they've had some of the captains, you've had like Kev and Geno, and these are lads who've been always around the club as opposed to like with Ireland the whole time. Mm. Sporadically, maybe you can have, I don't know if there was joint captains or whatever way they worked it, but they like to have the captain kind of there, as you say, setting the culture, setting the tone every week. So you're thinking, like, I don't know, it's a tough one. Like, I used to like to have my captain in the pack, like, you know, just because they're in the cold face. I used to, like, not like a full back running up and having the chat, like, having a clue what's going on in the forwards. Yeah. Like,
that's,
you know,
that's the Warren Gatland strategy. Warren Gatland's captains are always forwards. Mm. Always.
Yeah.
For that reason, he wants people up right there, right beside the ref, big arm around them. How are you?
Yeah.
You know,
having a beer with them.
Okay, next question. Okay, this is from Ivor Pabst. Should the foreign player rule, i.e., recruitment by Irish provinces, be varied to compensate for the imbalance of talent depth by province, e.g., Connacht and Ulster, to have more flexibility?
Connacht do have more flexibility.
Right, explain.
Their recruitment policy doesn't necessarily fall in line with what happens at Leinster, Munster and Ulster. They're given a little bit more leeway to sign more foreign players. Mm. Because it has to go through the players, what's it called? So the board or whatever, and they have to, the players advisory group or something. Mm. Anyway, they have to sanction all signings, and they seem to get a lot more leeway.
Okay, so that's it. So, example, if Leinster are trying to sign a foreign scrum half, that board are going to look around and go, no. Mm. There's already, you know, there's not enough players here to fill green jerseys in that position. But if you're a Connacht person looking to do the same thing, you might be saying, yeah, he's good.
It goes back to the depth chart again, and they look at Leinster, say, at the moment, Johnny, Joey and Ross Byrne, you know, and they think, oh, there's three good tens. Ireland need the second one playing every week, you know, so that's obviously where the Ulster debate's coming. But so they can straight away go through that, and if they see a break in the Irish setup with not three or four good guys coming up, they won't let you sign because they need guys coming down the track, you know.
Mm. So it's not just the quality of player, it's the position as well.
Yeah.
With the national head on. Okay. There's a good question here. It's a bit harsh, but we're going to ask it. So this is from Dermot. Was the Thomas incident the worst play of the professional era? If not, which moment would stand out?
Oh, Jesus.
Clement Poitrineau wants a word. That's what I will say. Do you remember when Rob Pevely tried? Like, that was a stunner.
Yeah. Trevor Leota drinking the beer, was that the same day? he was the hooker, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he goes to the crowd, picks a beer off a fan and starts drinking it.
During the game?
Yeah, I think it was somewhere around the game. He was certainly in the gear. I'm trying to get a memory of it now.
There's been a few over the years in sevens where a player's been over the line and then swanned around and been picked up and not allowed. They dot the ball down.
Luis Amon, I remember, for London Irish, did the big dive, dropped it.
Big dive as well. He really went for that. Yeah.
No one near him. They're the bad ones.
People been waiting for Ashton to do that for years now.
Yeah.
Staunton
running through, looking around, and the ball hitting off his knee.
That's a great call.
Yeah.
What was that one where Wasps won the Heineken Cup where it was a grubber? I think Owen Redden got the try, wasn't it? And it was all the...
We're about 5 minutes earlier then.
Oh, brilliant. Sorry, I'm on Bilbao time. Yeah.
All right, that's it. I think we'll end it on there.
No, I can't lose here at the end of it.
Okay, make sure to use the hashtag AskTHY when you want a question, if you want to get a question in for next week. So, thanks to Pat, to Jimmy, to Owen, to Alan McNan for producing, and Shane Dempsey and Fiona Delaney were on production. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe. Brought to you by Innocent Super Smoothies. On the bright side.
the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
And Ring Rose comes through. Oh, that is brilliant from Ring Rose. Ring Rose is going here. What a score.